Hi, I'm Reagan, and thanks for listening to my dad's podcast, Lasting Learning.
Hey, before we jump into this episode, I've got to ask, have you signed up for the free standards-based grading webinar taking place on September 20th, 2023 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time? Right, this 90-minute webinar is perfect for those of you just wanting to get a little bit more information about what standards-based grading is. Whether you're in a school that's already adopted SBG and just need to tweak it, or if you are in a school or district that is traditional ABCs, 100-point scales, and you're looking at taking things to the next level, and you want to make sure that you know what your kids know, sign up for this 90-minute webinar, completely free, no strings attached. Just click the link in the show notes, follow me on Facebook, and click the event. Sign up. Bring some friends. Bring some family. Bring some colleagues. Bring some popcorn and your favorite drink. We'll see you there. Hi, and welcome back to Lasting Learning. This is Dave Schmidto, and this episode's going to be a little bit different. During the summer months of 2023, I'm offering some free professional learning to you. This summer, I'm going to be releasing special episodes. It's basically going to be an audiobook. I'm going to read to you my book, Bold Humility. Bold Humility was first published 5 years ago. And as a result of that 5-year anniversary, I decided to make it available to you, my listeners, this summer. Now, these recordings are not going to be evergreen. They're not going to be out there forever. They are only going to be out for a limited time. So make sure you listen, make sure you share, make sure you're willing to grow. Here we go. Bold Humility. Chapter 5, Hire the Best, Challenge the Best, Cheer on the Best. The educational landscape has changed so much in recent years. It's almost unrecognizable to many of us when we compare it to the schools we attended as children. But this is a good thing, because the world we live in has evolved as well. Gone are the days of TV dinners, rotary phones, and gas-guzzling station wagons. We now live in a world of innovation and constant change, a world where there literally is an app for everything, a world that rewards creativity, a world unlike anything any of us could have imagined when we sat behind our desks as kids and stared at our teachers while daydreaming about the world of tomorrow. The primary purpose of formalized schooling is to equip our current students with the skills and abilities to succeed independent of school, to thrive on their own, and to have the ability and capacity to evolve with the world around them. Or perhaps better stated, to lead the next evolution of the world. Our responsibility is not to longingly look back on the educational experience we came from and work our hardest to replicate it today. Our duty is to look to the future and try to equip our students with the skills necessary to adapt to whatever is thrown at them. Our students today deserve teachers who understand that school is different, the world is different, children are different, and as a result, their classrooms must be different. As a school leader, the most important part of my job is hiring teachers. Teachers are the ones who'll be working with students day in and day out. Teachers are the influencers, the life shapers, the destiny makers. As much as I want to believe a great administrator is what makes a great school, the reality is it's a great teacher who can help shape a great life. My job is to hire, support, cheer, and get out of the way. If I hire well, the rest is easy. So how do I make sure that only the best are in front of our kids? Is this even possible when there's a nationwide teacher shortage? When the average teacher only lasts 3.3 years in a classroom? When so many teachers have to work two jobs to stay out of poverty? Can this be done? The answer is emphatically yes. I could sit around and complain about the impossibility of the task. I could yell at state and local politicians to do something about the broken system. Or I can embrace the fact that all great change in America begins at the grassroots level and embark on a quest to find those who want to fight the fight with me. If the U.S. Marine Corps can encourage the few, the proud, and the brave to take up arms and defend our country in foreign lands, surely I can find a few amazing individuals each year who are willing to take on the challenge to change a generation. And that, my friends, is exactly what I've been able to do. Teaching, we've been told for years, is both an art and a science. Teaching is not a profession that requires a passion for assigning work and reading. Teaching is not a profession that can be replaced by curriculum and textbooks. Teaching is a profession that requires a passion for people and a desire for progress. It is not a profession seeking perfection and compliance. Teaching is a profession that requires risk-taking and reflection. When I'm selecting teachers, I care less about their content knowledge and more about their ability to engage and inspire. I care less about their high school GPA and more about the diversity of their social media followers. I care less about the last book they read and more about the shows scheduled to be recorded on their home DVR. I want teachers who are living life, who have a passion for today and a desire to change tomorrow. Sure, I want people who know their content and can address the standards, but getting someone who simply knows the difference between an antecedent and a pronoun is no match for someone who knows how to get students excited about that difference. I'm looking to hire people who can inspire people, not just a teacher who can present content to students. Good day, bad day. For those who have ever interviewed with me or served on an interview team with me, you can attest that there are only two questions that I consider important. Serving on interview committees, we always ask 8 to 10 questions that all participants are able to hear responses appropriate to their interests. But for me, there are only two that matter. They are always my first and last questions. Feel free to take note if you have a meeting coming up with me in the future. The first question I ask is very similar to the first question asked at every interview. Everyone wants to know who you are, what your experience is, and where you went to college. I'm a firm believer that, just like in the classroom, we should never ask students a question that Google can answer. I should never ask a question during an interview that a resume can address. A candidate's resume is what got him or her to the interview. It's their personality and passion that will determine whether or not they get the job. So instead of just asking the candidates to introduce themselves, I begin by introducing my school. I describe it as though it's my child. I describe its strengths and its struggles. I describe the way it looks, the way it sounds, and its latest celebrations. Remember, a school is not the brick and mortar. A school is the people inside. My goal is to provide a realistic preview of the job. I want the candidate across the table to know from our very first interaction that this school is my pride and joy. Every child in my school is someone else's baby, and I take that very seriously. It's my responsibility to remind the people I work with daily that we are not just chasing scores, we are chasing destinies. As I spend 5 minutes describing the wonder and passion that exists within the walls of my school, I then ask very simply, so tell us how your past has equipped you to work with us in changing lives. By front-loading who we are and describing our strengths, weaknesses, and passions, I'm able to draw more from the candidates. They hear me say the word us. They know that we are about changing lives. They know that simply telling me what their major in college was is not going to cut it. The first question is like a first date. It helps me determine whether or not I want to take the relationship further. It's a chance to let both sides figure out if there's any potential or whether or not we should just cut our losses early on. The final question I ask candidates, if they make it that far, is always the hardest question for candidates to answer. I've had many seasoned teachers sitting in committees with me saying, I am so glad I already have this job because I wouldn't be able to answer that. And you know what? Those teachers then know what my expectations are. The question is a simple one, but the answers given say so much. Take a look at it and then see if you can answer it. Are you ready? I promise you the buildup was over the top for the simplicity you're about to read. So here's the question. At the end of the day, how do you know if it's been a good day or a bad day? That's it. Seems simple enough, right? Not so fast. Throughout the years, I've heard literally hundreds of answers to this question. It's a question with no right answer, but countless wrong answers. This question is designed to assess reflection, optimism, and outlook. For many of us, when we end our day, we look back on defining moments. We resonate on that one child who got under our skin, the one child who didn't get it, the one parent who hung up on us, the one staff member who passed by without acknowledgement. For others, the day is always sunshine and rainbows, while for others, there's always a dark cloud. Some live in the moment, espousing that there is always tomorrow, while others hold on to yesterday with a vendetta to make amends. The question with no answer is not designed to stump anyone. It's designed to emphasize the importance of reflection. Each day, we must begin our day with a purpose. Our purpose cannot be to simply cross tasks off our list. Our purpose has to be to make a measurable difference. Throughout the day, the decisions we make either get us closer to success or closer to failure. Circumstances will pop up. Life will get in the way. Others will try to exert an influence, but we own our progress. When I meet a candidate for the first time, I'm looking for someone who recognizes this. I'm looking for goal setters and dreamers. I'm looking for doers and action planners. I want people willing to step up and own their impact. Teachers must know that they make a difference and be willing to own that, both when things are going well and when they go adrift. Teachers must know the difference between success for each student and success for every student. Teachers must measure their own success, not by their tenacity and desire, but by the students they teach. Teachers must own that it's their job to make students smile, passionate, curious, and informed. Teachers must be able to measure their success and ability to do each of these, and must know that many days they will fail in one or more areas with one or more students, but this does not make them a failure. Highly effective does not mean perfect. It means vulnerable, open, honest, and progressive. It means a willingness to create it, own it, and fix it, whatever it is. If you want to be a teacher for me, you must be willing to embrace bold humility yourself. Your ability to know what's working and what's not is what it is all about. So what do you do if you have a candidate with all the passion in the world, a smile that's contagious, and an infectious love for learning, who also lacks experience, struggles with identifying best practices with pedagogy, and only has basic knowledge of content? Well, assuming no other candidates possess all these attributes in high quantities, you hire them and you coach them. Pedagogy and content can be taught. Passion and love cannot. Just as teachers must fully embrace their power to change the lives of their students, quality administrators must believe they have the power to shape and cultivate teachers. We have to stop the search for the teaching candidates who will give us the quickest short-term results and begin to embrace the search for the person who will have the most fruitful career. Give me a teacher willing to make a difference for 30 years over the teacher who will rock it for the next three years, any day of the week. To use a sports analogy, I would rather draft a quality prospect who will grow up in the system than acquire a rental player in free agency who I know will get us a trophy 1 year and leave us rebuilding again the following year. In changing destinies, we need to be creating dynasties and legacies. The idea of a leader being a coach is a struggle in today's educational world, so filled with accountability. To be an effective coach, you must acquire trust. Trust requires vulnerability. Vulnerability requires a willingness to not just show strengths, but to be truly humble and share struggles as well. All across America today, teachers are feeling beat up. They're tied to data. They're observed for effectiveness. They received generalized labels as a result of the evidence collected. In many states, merit pay has come into the equation. Teachers are compensated based on their final evaluation ratings, causing many to shy away from ever sharing a vulnerability in fear that it may impact the money they can bring home to their families. And we wonder why innovation is disappearing from our schools. We've driven it out. I'm all for accountability. I believe teachers should be evaluated based on student outcomes. What I'm not in favor of is when we tell teachers exactly what to do and use compliance as our guide, not creativity, flexibility, and differentiation. Here's the dilemma we face. We have kids who need us today. We have kids who show up for school every single day who need the absolute best from every adult in their lives. The accountability mandates in place across America recognize this and attempt to put pressure on schools to ensure that only the best are available for our kids. That makes perfect sense. But here's what happens. Schools hire new teachers, teachers with a developing skill set, and are expected to measure their performance using the same criteria as those of veteran staff members with more instructional tools in their toolbox, developed from experience. These new teachers are then compared to their peers, and are then oftentimes left feeling defeated at the end of the school year, within a few short years before being given the opportunity to become an expert, they decide that teaching just isn't for them. Schools then repeat the pattern over and over again in a quest to find the diamond in the rough. So instead of taking a few years to groom teachers into career educators, schools are left every year plugging holes left by teachers who left the career feeling unsupported, unwanted, and undervalued. The solution, again, could be the one where we sit around and complain about the brokenness of the system, or we can play within the confines of the box and make it better. I'm happy to say the teachers I've been able to hire truly are the best of the best. I've already described how I find them, but the real magic is in how we keep them. Triangles are stronger than circles. In leadership training, we often learn about our inner circles. These are described as trusted advisors, those who are given access to privileged information, can help guide decision-making. In some schools, these inner circles have titles such as leadership teams, school improvement teams, data teams, etc. You know what I'm referring to. To those within the inner circle, those well within the circle, typically the principal and assistants, these teams are seen as critical to school success. What they fail to take notice of is the constant dance, negotiation, and debate that's occurring among those on the fringe or just outside the circle. You see, a circle has no defined sides. It has no edges or corners. It has an infinite number of entry points. When we have inner circles, oftentimes we create a sense of competition as people attempt to work their way inside. Sometimes this is done by pushing. Sometimes it's done by pulling. Sometimes it's done by just squeezing into a space already occupied and trying to make room. Inner circles may be great for decision-making, but they are a climate and culture destroyer. Everyone in a school knows who's part of the in crowd. Everyone knows that the inner circles are actually concentric circles, like a target with a bullseye in the middle, with some standing close to the center and others a little further to the edge. It's the edge that causes the struggle. The center is where the most value exists, with fewer points awarded the more you move away. The same is true with this leadership approach. An inner circle creates a multi-layered hierarchy of competition, debate, and strife that so often is unnecessary. In an attempt to create trust and transparency, I use a leadership triangle approach as opposed to a circle. The major difference in this approach is that my triangle has three defined sides. I make it known that anytime I'm working to make a big decision, I'll work to hear from two other sources other than mine. What I typically do is identify two individuals who have established rapport and respect with their peers, are willing to be vocal and honest, yet also willing to engage in debate. I announce who these individuals are to allow for a period of conversation and research, then sit down with just the three of us and hash it out. The people with an active role in the triangle vary based on the decision being made. I work to diversify and actually keep a spreadsheet of names on my computer to remember who I've utilized. Different problems have different triangles. Using the same person over and over again is no better than having a circle. Everyone knows this person is in the bullseye and becomes a target for jealousy. Triangles really are amazing. The three branches of government we have in America operate as a triangle approach to leadership. Triangles are shapes of strength in architecture, often used to hold up bridges and roadways. They also work to make teachers better. As a designated school leader, I understand that I am often susceptible to hearing yes speak when in decision-making mode. To my face, everyone agrees with me. Behind closed doors or in a staff lounge, real feelings can get shared. This happens in every school building in America, but my goal is to try and limit this. I want real feedback. I want real dialogue. I want conversation and collaboration. The triangle encourages this, as I am always outnumbered by others. Entering a decision-making process with two other people, each of us has the opportunity to create an ally and to persuade the majority. I understand that some believe the final decision-making should always fall on the building principal, the designated leader, for hiring, for staffing, for school improvement, etc. But I'm a believer that my role is not to make every decision, but instead, it's to drive the process and to support the decisions that are made. It's a leader's job to put the right people in the room, not to script the decisions that come out of the room. The school is not my school. It is and needs to be a reflection of every person who walks the halls. Just as the role of a parent is not to create perfect children, but to raise future empowered adults. My job as a principal is not to create dependent staff members incapable of making decisions without me, but to create a collection of individuals who thrive on discourse, debate, and problem solving. My goal is to have a collection of individuals who do not approach me and ask for solutions to their problems, but instead seek my input on how they can best solve their own problems. The difference is huge. I recognize in my building, I'm not the go-to person for everyone, nor can I be. Not only is it an impossible task for me to give everyone the attention they need and deserve, but I don't have the knowledge and experience to guide everyone to greatness. As the boss, many teachers want to assume that I have all the answers. Many principals want their teachers to feel like they have all the answers, but I'm well aware of my weaknesses. Trying to fake my way through expert status simply makes me look like a fraud and destroys trust. I know this firsthand. It's why I now believe leaders should spend more time trying to communicate and less time trying to be competent. Instead, using my triangulation of leadership, I align support with everyone, both personally and professionally. Triangles allow for relationships to form that don't often form in large committees and subcommittees, allowing me to get a better pulse on where individuals stand, what they need, and what they believe. My role is to not just create good policies and procedures, but to keep a pulse on how I can support and coach each individual I work with. The conversations that often develop from triangle dialogue is better than anything else I've stumbled upon. Coaching is very rarely done best by those who were the best. Basketball fans can tell you how coaching worked out for Michael Jordan. It didn't. It was also a disaster for my childhood idol, Isaiah Thomas. It's often the second-tier talent that make the best guides later on. The problem is, often those who excel in the craft have a difficult time understanding why others can't do likewise. They feel like if they were so great, everyone can be great. Their lens of expectations can then become skewed and frustrations bubble up instead of opportunities. What tends to make for a great coach is also what makes for a great person. A coach must be a manager of personalities. A coach must be relatable, optimistic, hopeful, and encouraging. It's why oftentimes in schools, successful athletic coaches are also popular people. An instructional coach should have the same level of popularity. If an athletic coach can be popular among students, an instructional coach should be popular among peers. In each school I've been in, I've hired instructional coaches, regularly placed them in decision-making triangles, and made my selection process for who fills these roles not because of inherent content knowledge, but instead because of their personality and persuasive abilities. I have no shame admitting the academic success seen at the schools I have been lucky enough to work in has nothing to do with me, other than my decision to hire amazing people. When you're able to get people, amazing people, hire them. You can always train content and pedagogy, but you cannot always inspire passion and commitment to grow and improve. You can have growth or you can have compliance, but you can't have both. With a little help from my friends by Liz Roboto, a teacher from Florida. Teaching is a profession like any other. It can be one of the most rewarding professions, but can also be one of the loneliest. When preparing for this profession, teachers receive more tips, tricks, and advice than most know what to do with. The one thing that no one prepares you for is how isolating teaching can be if you do not have the support that you need and a strong team surrounding you. Now, don't get me wrong. I absolutely love teaching with every ounce of my being, and I know that this is where I'm supposed to be. But that doesn't mean that some days aren't rough. You might feel like a complete failure for a variety of reasons on more than one occasion. You might question if you really change the lives of your students. You may even question if you can keep pushing through all the state mandates and keep your eyes focused on what truly matters, the kids. This is where having your team or your tribe comes in. Your tribe will be your biggest cheerleaders through your new and sometimes crazy surrounding ideas or for your classroom. They will help you learn from your mistakes and grow into the teacher that you want to become, the teacher you were meant to be. Your tribe will also lift you up on days when you're not so sure you can keep going. They'll remind you of why you chose to become a teacher. They'll help you feel not so alone. If you're lucky, you'll have the support and guidance of some amazing teachers, coaches, and administrators at your school. Bring these people into your tribe. If you're not so lucky in this way, don't stop looking. Your tribe is out there. You were not meant to be alone in this profession. When looking for your tribe, please understand your tribe doesn't have to be other teachers on your grade level. It doesn't have to be other teachers at your school. It may include some teachers and staff from your school as well as schools from across the country. With the guidance and encouragement of my principal, I turned to Twitter to help me find other like-minded teachers to help keep me engaged, encouraged, to learn from, and to grow with. Whoever they are and wherever they are, find them, love them, support them, and know that they will love and support you in the same way. Bold next steps. Find a picture of yourself from when you were in school. The more embarrassing, the better. Display it in your classroom or office and use it to tell your story. Remind your students or staff what your dreams and hopes were when you were in school. 2, expand your tribe. If you are not actively engaged in social media, start now. The individuals who have provided testimonials in this book are part of my tribe. Follow them and expand your people power. 3, identify 2 people, only 2 people, who can help you make your next big decision. It's okay to start small by trying to decide where to go to lunch, but work towards finding those trusted members of your triangle who can keep you aligned to your priorities and what matters most. That concludes this episode of Lasting Learning. Want to learn more? Contact me at schmitto.net. Want to read more or listen to more of this audio book? Just come on back. More Bold Humility will be coming soon.